Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of the Optimism Show. Today we have Corey, the founder of The Trinity, actually a serial entrepreneur in the Web3 space. Corey, welcome.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on the show, Chris. I guess just to have a little brief introduction about myself. I'm actually the co-founder of Stably, which is a stablecoin technology company that's been around since 2018. And I'm also a core contributor at The Trinity, which is a DeFi protocol, the first subsidized DeFi lending protocol that's launching on the Fractal L2 network next month in December. So yeah, super happy to be on the show, and you know, would love to tell you more about whatever that you'd like to know.
That's fantastic. It's a pleasure having you here, actually. So the thing is, like, you're building something amazing with The Trinity right now, and you already are in the stablecoin space for years. Like, you were here last bull cycle, even before that. I'd love to hear a bit about your journey. And I know you have some amazing stories from last bull cycle, especially around the stablecoin wars that were going on. So I'd love to hear more about how you ended up here and what was your journey up until this point.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess maybe we can start with some background myself. I'm based in Seattle, Washington. Actually, I was born and raised in Vietnam. I came with my family and immigrated to the U.S. when I was 12. I've been in Seattle ever since. I graduated from the University of Washington. Oh, actually, right there, UW-Basel, right? And got a degree in business and marketing. And, you know, I started working in the banking sector, financial sector. And my last job before I started Stably, I was in 2017. I was a private equity analyst or data analyst at PitchBook. So based in Seattle, it's pretty popular in the VC private equity space, but, you know, basically a data platform on fundraising deals and things like that. And during my time there, I was actually trading crypto very actively on the side as well. I was building, trading algorithms, actually. Very simple, trend following trading algos that I could automate my strategies and, work full time and actually have this thing make money in the background, right? Or hopefully make money in the background, right? And that's actually how I came to meet my co-founder, my Stably co-founder, David, who was also based in Seattle. He was an engineer for Amazon at the time in 2017. We met each other at a trading meetup after work. And we were sharing, trading strategy with each other. And, we became really good friends that way. And the whole time in 2017, when we were trading crypto, Bitcoin, Ethereum, Litecoin, and all that stuff, Tether, USDT, right, was the only stablecoin that was around. And so, a light bulb came up in our head. And we thought that, we could create a US dollar-backed stablecoin as well. Another, alternative to Tether to promote diversity in this space, right? And so we, at the end of 2017, I left my job. Early 2018, David left his job as well. And we went out and we raised a small $500,000 seed round to start Stably. I think that was April of 2018. And yeah, and then, we were off to the races. It took us about 8 months to develop a stablecoin called USDS, and we actually launched it on the Ethereum network by the end of the year, by the end of 2018. And we also got listed on Bittrex, actually, which if you remember Bittrex, it was a US-based crypto exchange. It was also based here in Bellevue near Seattle. So I knew the team there very well, actually. And we got listed on Bittrex in December, and things were looking pretty good. However, the biggest prize at that point was actually Binance, right? Binance was the world's biggest centralized exchange. And so, fortunately for us, Binance did reach out to us, right? And they asked if we wanted to entertain being the fifth stablecoin to be listed on Binance. So for context, at that, by the time that we launched USDS in December 2018, USDC from Circle already came out at that point. We had True USD from Trust Token. We had PAX from Paxos. There were GUSD from Gemini, and, you know, so on and so forth, right? There was another company called Carbon as well. There were, you know, and they had a CUSD, right? And then Stably had USDS, right? Most of the major ones, Tether, Circle, Paxos, and TUSD from Trust Token, four of them, those four, they were already listed on Binance, right? And so Binance reached out to us and they said, you know, if we wanted to entertain being the fifth one. And so I said, of course I would entertain that idea, right? And so it took a little bit of, you know, back and forth with them on like the deal negotiation and all of that. We ended up not having to pay any listing fee, which is really good for us because, you know, we didn't have a lot of money back then. We actually got listed on Binance, USDS listed on Binance on, I think it was Chinese New Year, actually, in 2019. It was February something in 2019, right? And so, yeah, off to races we go, right? We actually raised another $1 million round to continue, you know, growing the project at that point. And it just so happened that later on I found out that we were actually competing with Gemini to get that fifth spot on Binance, to list our stablecoin on Binance. But luckily for us, somehow we got that deal, right? I don't know how, but like we managed to get that deal. And, you know, so GUSD from Gemini, they ended up not getting listed, right? And USDS from Stably got listed instead. And so we got on Binance, but within 6 to 8 months or so of getting listed on Binance, I noticed that something was going on, right? No matter how much capital, so for context, you know, to get on Binance, we have to make sure that there is liquidity, right, in the order books in order to maintain trading pairs of our stablecoin versus other assets like Bitcoin or Ethereum or USDT or USDC, right? And so in order to do so, we had to go out and seek partnership with market makers and, you know, other, you know, professional trading firms, basically, in order to come in and provide liquidity, right? And so we would have to pay them, you know, fee retainers, basically, to essentially rent their capital, right, in order for them to provide liquidity for us. And initially, we got like $8 million of capital accumulated on the order books on Binance once we got listed, right? And then off to the races we go. But within 6 to 8 months, that number, it kept going down. Like people kept going in, keep redeeming stable coins from us and our stable coins from us. And, you know, it wasn't until later, a few months later, that I found out that there was a big stable coin war going on and that we inadvertently got caught up into it because, you know, it was supposed to be Gemini, not us that's, you know, supposed to be get involved in this, right? But what was happening was, you know, all the major stable coin issuers, they were giving out a lot of incentives, right, to market makers, to these professional trading firms in order to distribute their stablecoin into circulation, right? One of these incentives was a discount. And if you look this back, there's probably still news article about this, right? They were giving out discount, meaning they were selling their stablecoin at a penny or two penny discount, right? I don't want to point fingers specifically to who did this, but you can look it all up in the news, right? So it's probably still there on CoinDesk or CoinTelegraph articles, but they were selling these things at a discount. And so, you know, and a lot of the market makers who took up these deals, they weren't able to redeem them right away, right? They have to turn around and redistribute that into circulation on the secondary market. And so what had happened was these market makers, a lot of them, they took that deal and then they went onto Binance. They find another stablecoin like mine that does not have a redemption limit or policy, and then they traded for ours, right? And then they off-ramp out of USDS instead. That was one of the, you know, one of the ways that, you know, we got inadvertently attacked by, you know, these other stablecoin players who were pushing a lot of incentives into the market, right? And frankly, there were no way we were gonna win that battle. It's impossible, right? Unless we went out and get a ton more funding and trying to engage in that same kind of battle, but it was a race to the bottom, really. And that's the way that I saw it, right? And so by early 2020, we actually decided to delist from Binance because, you know, the expenses that we spent every month on market makers, you know, just renting their capital, paying for their services for their, you know, trading algorithm and all that, it was quite a lot, and we didn't have that capability in-house, right? So and so early 2020, we decided to delist from Binance and pivoted our business, pivoted Stably from running our own stablecoin brand to essentially providing stablecoin as a service, right? Providing stablecoin infrastructure to other clients, other B2B clients or B2B2C clients that are or institutions that are looking for stablecoin infrastructure, right? And we actually found a really good niche starting in 2020. We realized that there were a lot of emerging blockchain networks, such as, you know, Ripple, Stellar, VeChain, et cetera, a lot of, you know, blockchains that don't have foundational stablecoin infrastructure, right? Not even like Wrapped stablecoin, for example. Right, they don't have native USDT or USDC, and they don't even have bridge stablecoin that is, you know, wrapped over. Right, so, so we thought that okay, so here is an opportunity where we could, you know, further build the business and take, you know, the experience and the technology and infrastructure that we have already, and you know, try to make something out of it. Right, and ever since then, that has been doing pretty well. We have worked with probably more than 12 or 13 emerging blockchain clients. We even work with a gold precious metal dealer in order to work in order to issue a gold-backed stablecoin, right? We have been, I think, bringing in probably a little bit over $1 million in revenue ever since, just doing stablecoin as a service. And we also have a fiat on and off ramp business that we started around that time as well. We have processed over probably $150 million in total on and off ramp volume to date through that business. So yeah, so that's pretty much, you know, what I've been doing here at Stably. Nowadays, you know, I'm still working with new clients that are new leads that are coming in looking for stable clients as a service, right? Recently, last year, for example, we worked with Coin98. To create CUSD. Coin98 is a major, you know, crypto company from Asia, and they're also one of the largest wallets on Solana. Many different networks, not just Solana. And so we created CUSD for them as a service, and we're actually in discussion with several other leads right now to create additional, you know, branded or white label stablecoin as a service, if you will, for them. And there'll be more announcement coming soon from Stably for that. So yeah, recently as well, during this year, we decided to embark on a DeFi project in partnership with the Frax team. So as you know, Frax, earlier this year, they launched Fraxel, which is an Ethereum L2 network. And, you know, with a lot of our experience in the stablecoin space and, you know, generally DeFi as well, we decided to contribute, me personally as the founder of Stably and my co-founder and some of our team members were core contributors to DTrinity, which is a DeFi lending and borrowing protocol that is going to launch on Fraxel next month in December. And it's going to be the first subsidized DeFi lending and borrowing protocol. And would love to tell you more about that as well. I know I probably had a long intro so far, so I'll just stop right there. And you know, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer.
That was excellent, honestly. Thank you. Thank you for sharing all of that. And it's really like one can see that it's really been a journey, like going from those stressful times and the stable coin wars to like figuring it out and going against players that are literally backed by massive corporate funds and still sustaining it over there. It's quite impressive. And I'm really curious though, like I know that you're building something really cool and amazing with DTrinity, with really being the first subsidized borrowing and lending protocol. But I would love for our listeners to learn more about it because I think it's the first ever use that I heard of DeFi in the way that you are doing it, and it could really change things up.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess for a little bit of context, right? Typically, when you have a stablecoin, right? Especially nowadays, you have newer stablecoins that are yield bearing, right? Like Athena, for example. You have USDE, from Athena, which is a Delta Neutral strategy stablecoin, right? It's backed by Delta Neutral Bitcoin Ethereum, and it collects the funding rate as the yield, right? And so these yields is typically paid out to those who hold the stablecoin or who stake them, right? And this is also the same case with Maker or Sky. They have a DAI stablecoin, which you can stake for SDAI, right? And then Frax as well, right? Frax is a big DeFi stablecoin project, and you can stake Frax for SFrax, which is also yield bearing, right? So what we realized there is all the major stablecoin projects, including, even Circle, right? I saw Circle announced the other day, or was it Coinbase? I forgot. One of the two, they announced that if you deposit USDC in the Coinbase wallet, you receive rewards, right? That's effectively the yield, right? And even tokenized T-bills projects, right? You tokenize U.S. Treasury bills or bonds, and then you distribute the yield. It's usually going to the holder, right? The holders of the stablecoin, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. That is kind of like, the traditional model, right? But what we realized was doing so only address one side of the equation, which is the supply side, right? When you're holding something, you are basically buy-side supply for it, right? However, what it doesn't address is the demand side of the equation, which typically involves borrowing, right? Think of the context of the lending protocol, for example, right? When you lend, you are supplying, right? You lend stablecoin, you supply stablecoin. And the opposite of supply is demand, which is the borrowing side, right? You would have to post collateral in order to borrow that stablecoin. And then you would have to pay interest, right, on top of your loan in order to over time, right, in order to have that loan outstanding. And nobody has ever thought about redirecting that yield from, a stablecoin reserve, underlying reserve, to the borrower of that stablecoin. Right, which is the demand side of the equation. Most people have only thought about, giving it to the supply side, which is the holders or the lender, the suppliers, right? And in the context of a lending protocol, ultimately, doing either one of these things, it achieves basically a similar outcome, right? When you, for example, if I am a stablecoin issuer, let's say I am USDC, for example, and I decide that I want to incentivize lenders or suppliers of USDC on Aave, for example, right? So now I'm going to take, let's say, the reserve of USDC is sitting in bank deposit and T-bills. Maybe it's yielding 5% APY right now, for example, right? They take that 5% APY and they can, or 4% of it even, right? And they can send it to Aave, to those who are depositing or supplying USDC on Aave, right? To further incentivize and boost their yield, right? If they did that, then obviously that would bring more USDC supply to Aave, wouldn't it? And because there is more supply, that would decrease the utilization on Aave, which would ultimately decrease the interest rates for the borrowers as well, for both the borrowers and the suppliers, right? But now the supplier, they're being further incentivized by this external yield, right, from the reserve of USDC. Now, on the other hand, if you were to redirect that yield to the borrowers of USDC on Aave, for example, right, you also accomplish a similar thing, right? You directly lower interest rate for the borrowers. If you take that same 4 or 5% reserve earnings from USDC and you give it to the borrowers instead, right? Now, between giving it to the suppliers and giving it to or the holders effectively, right, and giving it to the borrowers, if you give it to the suppliers, right, because of the interest rate models and most lending protocol, maybe the interest rate, it can, because there's a lot of supply coming in, it can go very, very low, and it can go to as low, as close to as zero as much as it can, right? But it would never go below zero. That's just the way the interest rate model works, right? And no matter, you can put in like billion and billions of supply, the interest rate will never go negative. It can go to like 0 point something, right? Now, if you were to subsidize borrowing costs directly, For example, USDC borrowers, if they were to receive that 4 or 5% directly from Circle for borrowing, that interest rate could potentially go negative, because when utilization on a lending protocol is low, the interest rate to borrow might just be like 1, 2, or 3%, right? If Circle kicks in another 4 or 5%, boom, now the borrowing rate has gone negative, which means you're getting paid to borrow at this point, right? So that's kind of like, one of the observations that we have made throughout, our whole entire time through this, in this stablecoin industry, right? Most of the yield is being externalized to the supply side of the equation, whereas the demand side of the equation is not being addressed. And it's not really the fault of the industry. This is just sort of like a not an intuitive idea, right? Because traditionally, you don't really have subsidized loans. It's not really a thing in the private sector. You have subsidized loan with government loans, student loans, or veteran loans, things like that, right? Yeah. Low-income housing, things like that. But never subsidized loan with, car loans or normal mortgages. Nobody got money to subsidize you like that, right? Okay, maybe if you're a really big client with a bank, they might give you VIP rates or something. You can consider it a discount or a sort of subsidy if you want.
It's still not going to be subsidized to where the interest rate goes below zero, though. I doubt that will ever happen.
So that possibility, it could exist in the DeFi lending space if the stablecoin that is the medium for borrowing actually externalizes the underlying yield from its reserve to the borrower, right? So that's where the light bulb went up in our head. And we thought that, okay, why don't we create a DeFi lending protocol with its own native decentralized stablecoin that does exactly just this, right? It would be fully backed by exogenous reserve, right? By other stablecoins or yield-bearing stablecoins, right? Fully on-chain, 100% decentralized, fully, verifiable. And the yield that is generated of that reserve, it would be used to mint, new stable coins to back new stable coin and be sent to the borrowers as subsidies or rebates effectively in order to lower their borrowing costs. That's pretty much the whole entire idea behind the Trinity, right? And that's why, we believe we are the first one in DeFi to kind of explore this model. Another motivation for doing this is there's actually a structural issue in the DeFi space right now, where the yield benefit of a stablecoin, it actually becomes a disbenefit or like a burden for the borrowers, right? When you borrow a stablecoin and that stablecoin is yield bearing, guess what? Your debt is going to further compound, right? You're going to have, you owe more interest now because that stablecoin yield is appreciating, right? So the stablecoin value is like the yield bearing stablecoin value is appreciating. So now you owe more debt. And on top of that, you're still paying interest to the lending protocol, to the lender, right? So it doesn't make any sense for anybody to borrow a yield bearing stablecoin unless they're trying to short it for whatever reason, right? Now, In order for you to have a stablecoin that is yield bearing, but for that yield to benefit the borrowers instead of having it in this kind of like structural issue, you have to bifurcate that yield from the reserve and send it separately to those borrowers, right? Which is what we're doing. We're launching on Fraxel mainnet next month. The reason we picked Fraxel was Sam Casmian from Frax. He's been a really good friend of mine since many years now. So we knew each other since way back 2019, I think. Maybe was it 2018? Long time, right? And he told me earlier this year that they're launching Fraxel, the L2, and it's going to be really exciting. And he thinks it's going to be a really good opportunity for us to partner together on this idea, right? To bring the Trinity to Fraxel and turn Fraxel into one of the top L2s in DeFi, where people can lend LP or Loop stable coins and get the best benefits, right? And so that's how I got started with Fraxel. And we actually won the Fraxel hackathon earlier this summer as well. We came in first place. out of many, a couple of hundred projects I submitted. And we also raised a little bit of initial funding already for the Trinity. We have the founders of Sam, the founder of Frax. We have Rune, the founder of MakerDAO or Sky, I keep forgetting. And also the founders of Curve and Convex as our advisors and backers, right? So we're really well positioned right now to make a lot of noise soon when we launch. We're already in talks with Gauntlet, Morpho, and we're working with Curve as well and many other, you know, big name in the DeFi space in order to bring this idea of subsidized lending into reality very soon.
That's fantastic, honestly. And like, it's like having such a novel case and what you explained with the looping and with the interest rates increasing and everything. It's something that especially like certain individuals would specifically value, especially at the current state of the DeFi space. And personally, from how I see it, this, like looking at the DeFi space, it only has around 7 million, if I'm not wrong, actual users, compared to just how many people are on crypto in general, on chain. The DeFi space is still quite small. So, and the just maybe that the reason was because we were sticking so much to the models that we're used to in traditional finance, when without considering like what you're doing right now, like the novel uses of blockchain and the novel uses of like on-chain money that can open up completely new doors for things to happen.
Yeah, I think that, no, first of all, DeFi's user base, yes, it is small, but I would say the capital concentration is pretty high, right? Like whoever that is DeFi knowledgeable, you know, they would typically deploy not a few hundred dollars, right? They would typically deploy quite a lot more than that. Unless you're trading meme coins, which I don't consider DeFi, right? It's a whole nother category or sector, right? In crypto. So, but typically people who are in DeFi, you know, maybe they're lending, they're yield farming, they're looping, they're, you know, playing around with Pendle, things like that, right? They have capital. They have capital to play with. They don't have just, you know, a few dollar or a few hundred bucks, right? So, and you have to also remember DeFi came into being during a time when, you know, interest rate was just starting to get was being raised, right? Remember DeFi summer? That was 2020, right? When that was when DeFi really, you know, really took off and, you know, yield farming and all that stuff became, you know, popular, right? From 2020 until at the end of 2021, we had a brief you know, rate cut cycle due to COVID, right? Because so the Fed had to print a lot of money and cut rate. And so that's why DeFi boomed. But ever since then, the past 3 years, we have been in a, you know, rate hike cycle, right? Where interest rate in traditional finance has been elevated, sucking capital away from DeFi, right? Sucking capital away from DeFi. And at the same time, it also, decreased yield in DeFi, right? At the same time, you know, crypto and Bitcoin was in a bear market. So, you know, yield in DeFi was also going down. Now that we are in, now we're done with that, right? Trump just got reelected. Gary Gensler is about to be out of the SEC. The Fed is literally cutting rate in a rate cut cycle right now, or hopefully inflation doesn't come back, right? I mean, if the inflation does come back, it might put a little halt to the party. But, you know, given the status quo, we're in a rate cut cycle. Bitcoin's going up. DeFi is doing well right now. So with more yield, elevation in DeFi and, you know, decreasing real world traditional finance yield or the risk-free rate in traditional finance going down because of the rate cut, I think that dynamic that we used to see in DeFi summer in 2020, 2021, it will come back, right? And when it comes back this time, you know, not just the capital, but the user base will expand it, you know, significantly more than last time.
Yeah, and that's an excellent point, because even looking at the last bull cycle when there was the, like during the DeFi summer, well, it was during the summer right now. I'm also going to link it that we have DeFi summer in December. By the way, Corey made a song about DeFi Summer in December. You can find it in the links in the comments, in the links in the description, pardon me. So what I was saying is, like, back then in that bull cycle, at least from my perspective, how I see it, is a lot of companies, a lot of things about DeFi this, DeFi that started popping up. So we might have needed that kind of butchering cycle of a year or 2 years just to remove all the companies that were not really doing much or contributing much to the ecosystem, so new ones can start coming up that truly make a change and that they're there to stay, not just...
I agree. I sure hope so. I've been around this cycle for 6 years now, which is like a long time in crypto, right? So
in this space is quite an eternity, actually.
Yeah, it is a long time. We've been very fortunate, actually. Not only have we had, you know, good investor backing. I mean, we never raised significant amount of money. In the past 6 years, I think we stably has raised a total of a little bit over $7 million or so. And then we brought in a lot of revenue as well to, you know, continue running our business from stablecoin as a service for the most part. And we also had really good support from people in the partners in the community, like Frax, for example, right? Really good friend, good partner. So it's thanks to that we're able to, you know, continue to be around here. And also our amazing team, right? I have a team of amazing team members. A lot of them are based offshore. A lot of them are based in Vietnam too, actually, in my home country. That's why we're there probably 3 or 4 times a year in order to work together with them. My co-founder, David, he actually moved to Vietnam earlier this year to work with the team. And, you know, he has a girlfriend over there now. So, you know, so he's there full time. Actually, he's coming back for the holidays next week or so. So I actually look forward to seeing him again soon.
It's fantastic. So she moved over to Vietnam and you're staying in the U.S.
That's funny. Isn't that funny? It works. Sooner than later, I probably will look into relocating there in order to make it easier to work with my team as well. I just got to figure out, because, you know, I'm married and my wife, she's also, she works full time as a pharmacist. And, you know, pharmacists make decent money in the U.S., so I don't want to, you know, I don't want to mess that up either, right? So it just, eventually we'll make that move. Yeah.
Yeah, it'll come. It'll come. I have one other question for you, Corey, like switching to a different side, like, especially as we talked about the DeFi cycles, I'm really curious, like, how do you see DeFi evolving in the coming months, especially as you're preparing to launch? That's the first part of the question. And the second part of the question is, what should people interested in what you're doing with dTrinity really pay attention to, especially as you're preparing after you launch, I would say? Like, what should they start preparing for?
Yeah, so I guess I can talk about, I guess, address this in 3 points. One is kind of like general outlook. Second is what other cool things in DeFi that's coming up that I see. And then the last is dTrinity, right? What's coming out with dTrinity? So in terms of outlook, as I mentioned, if the Fed continued their rate cut path, well into next year, then, you know, I do believe that we will still see more capital going into crypto and DeFi, into risk assets in general, you know, stocks and things like that. And that will also drive yield in the DeFi space, because, you know, typically when there's demand and, you know, a bull market, you will see DeFi yield getting elevated. Actually, you can look at Athena right now, right? Stake USDE yield has gone from like less than 10% to over 20-30% recently, right? APY. And that is because there's a lot of trading demand for Bitcoin and Ethereum and crypto right now, which is, you know, the source that's driving the yield, the funding rates for, you know, these delta neutral, the delta neutral strategy that Athena is using, right? So even for like MakerDAO or Sky and their stablecoin, right? A lot of their yield is coming from borrowing interest that, you know, DAI users are paying, right? So as DeFi continue to grow and borrowing demand increases, then you can expect that yield to increase as well, right? Because the rate typically go up when there's more demand. So that's my outlook, right? I think there will be more capital flowing into DeFi. I think yields will continue to either sustain or elevate in DeFi. You will actually start seeing, and this is my second point here, you will start seeing more innovation in the DeFi space regarding yield-bearing stablecoins. So I think there will be more yield-bearing stablecoin projects coming out. We're already seeing some very innovative ones, such as Athena is definitely very cool. Even Binance came out with like a clone of Athena recently called BFUSD, I think. There's Level Money, Level USD. Shout out to the boys at Level USD. They're creating a stablecoin that is backed by Restake LRTs and Restake assets, right? And so,
quite interesting.
Yeah, so there's definitely interesting potential for yield sources from that project as well. There are some other projects like Inverse Finance. They have the dollar stablecoin. There's also Frax, obviously. I think Frax is about to announce a upgrade or like a new version of their stablecoin or something like that. I don't really have much details on it, to be honest. So we just gotta wait and see. But I think that's gonna bring a lot of excitement when they announce it next month as well. And then lastly for the Trinity, we obviously being one of the first lending protocol slash stablecoin DeFi stablecoin project that give a benefit to borrowers, right? Being one of the first one doing that, we do expect quite a lot of curiosity from the community when we launch, and a lot of initial surprise as well, because again, I don't think people have seen this before. When you look at an interest rate model that is subsidized at lower end of the utilization curve, it gets pretty crazy, right? You can get paid like a lot in order to borrow because, the rebates exist, but there's not a lot of debt. There's not a lot of borrowers. So you can actually earn significant rebates getting paid to borrow, right? So I think that will bring a lot of surprise to people who are not used to that concept. And that will, hopefully bring more exposure and, attention to our protocol. And yeah, we're going to launch on Fraxel and grow there initially for a few months. And very quickly, we will expand to Ethereum, which is the mothership, right? That's where all the liquidity in DeFi TVL is. And if we can work together with Fraxel and help them bring a lot of that to Fraxel as well, then that's what we're going to do. Future expansion, to other chain might include other L2s like Base, Arbitrum, Optimism, or might even look at Solana, right? There's a lot of cool things happening there.
After that, it's like really sky's not even the limit. So yeah, it's really about expanding and using that concept and expanding as fast as possible, really. Like connecting.
Yeah, it's actually it's a very complementary product idea, basically, because we're not paying yield to the holders of our stablecoin, which is going to be called DUSD, right? So DTrinity USD. So people who hold DUSD, they're not getting paid yield for it. People who borrow DUSD, they will get rebates for it, right? Because we're not paying yield to people who hold DUSD, we're not competing with other yield-bearing stablecoin projects, right? We're actually becoming a DUSD. You can think of it as a complementary product for Athena. SUSDE, for example, right? Their users could use DUSD, our stablecoin, to leverage or loop these other yield-bearing assets much more cheaply, much more efficiently, right? Enabling them to amplify, potentially amplifying their yield. And in doing so, it creates demand for both our stablecoin and their stablecoin, right? So we want to have this synergistic relationship with these other stablecoin projects, right? Like, I fought a stablecoin war before. I'm not trying to fight wars no more, right? I'm trying to make love. I'm trying to work with everybody, right? And this is how we're going to do it, right? Like, if we were to pay out yield, then would we be the same as everyone else? I'm definitely, we would be engaging in another war. And I was like, no, fuck that. Yeah. I don't want to play another war, right? So I want to work with everyone. So how do we make that happen? And this is how we make it happen.
Yeah, and it's actually an excellent, based on what you were saying, like, the Trinity in general is like an excellent example of finding synergy and like collaborating synergetically rather than just launching the same thing and pushing the same thing and competing for the same thing. While there's a much bigger market that maybe you just need to look at, and as a founder, you see it there, and everyone can collaborate and push each other, and everyone grows much faster.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one thing on dTrinity. And like, what are some other cool things that you expect for DeFi projects to start seeing in DeFi in the coming months, and for DeFi projects to start coming up with?
Yeah. Let me think here. I think Frax, actually, in addition to their new stablecoin announcement that's going to come out, they're going to have, they're working on a new DEX model called BAMM, Borrow AMM, which is pretty innovative. Essentially, the idea is when you provide liquidity in a regular AMM or automated market making DEX pool, most of the liquidity that you deposit into that pool is not being utilized, right? Maybe only 5, 10, 20% of it is being utilized most of the time. So the rest of the liquidity is just sitting idle, not being productive, right? So the idea of the BAMM is, let's make that productive, right? Let's make that productive so that we can also amplify, enhance the yield that the LPs could generate, right? And so they're coming out with that concept that product pretty soon, which I'm really excited to see. And I think there will be, once we have launched dTrinity, I'm pretty sure, you know, if this becomes a big success, obviously, I hope it will. I'm very confident it will. Other projects will probably look at this and be like, we should fork that, right? They probably will. They will probably, you know, fork the idea, and, you know, there will probably be other stablecoin that subsidize borrowers as well, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like another exciting thing I'm seeing is if you look at Pendle, right? Pendle is the largest interest rate marketplace protocol for DeFi users, and you're, you know, any major yield bearing assets from stake Ethereum to stake stablecoins or yield bearing stablecoins. You have yield tokens and principal token, YT and PT token trading activities, very active trading activities for these things on Pendle all the time, right? As more and more yield-bearing assets comes out, think of them as resources or raw materials, right? That you can put into Pendle now, and there's even more fun
more
activities
like
that can emerge from that, right? Tokenized real-world assets, even though that is, becoming more and more popular, I think the growth for that is very dependent on the risk-free rate, meaning the rate that, the Fed is paying or the Treasury is paying on the T-bills, right? And the Fed, setting the federal funds, the interest rate, and everything. So maybe we will see tokenized other real-world assets other than T-bills and, bonds and stuff, short-term bonds getting tokenized, maybe more different types of quality bonds, junk bonds even. It'd be interesting to see junk bonds getting tokenized. I mean,
sure,
we're starting to see a lot of that already with a lot of these RWA lending protocol where they tokenize, account receivables and, things like that, loans in the emerging markets. They're pretty much, lower grade bonds. Precious metal, I think, gold. Gold has been making a comeback, a big comeback lately, right? I think there's going to be more and more interest in tokenized precious metal, tokenized commodities that's going to come out in the next few years. And lastly, there is, I also want to give a shout out to the team at Fluid, at Instadap and Fluid. They created a really cool lending protocol model recently that effectively, you can think of it as LP looping in a way, right? Where you are providing liquidity to a pool, using that liquidity as collateral to borrow more stable points to provide more liquidity, and you keep looping that, right? And then that will enable you to earn a lot of yield. Well, first of all, provide a lot of liquidity into a pool, and secondly, earn, higher yields than normal, right? So I want to give a shout out to those guys over at the Fluid team for building such an amazing product. And, we would love to partner with them eventually once, dTrinity is live, and we can bring, DUSD over there and, the bring subsidies and rebates to their borrowers as well, and bringing interest rate even lower for borrowers over there. So yeah,
yeah, excellent points. Like, Corey, thank you for sharing all these things. Like, honestly, so much is going on that sometimes it's kind of hard to follow the entire space. Okay, this is happening. Now we have tokenized commodities and LP looping. And I think you did an excellent job breaking that down. So.